This is my story, and I'm sticking to it, or I'm going to do my best, right? Hey, let me ask you guys something. Why are you guys so afraid of me? What's up with these? You guys are all lining up in the back. Some Sunday, I'm going to get on that white thing. I'm just going to totally make you flip your chairs around. I don't know what it is, but anyway, we're going to be in John's gospel today, John chapter 5. It's page 742. If you use one of those church Bibles that we give out, that you're welcome to steal at any time. So we'd love to know that people are reading the Bible. So John's gospel. But while you're turning there, I want to ask you a question. I want you to put up your hand if you know or recognize the name Aaron Ralston. Raise your hand if you know that name. Wow. Boom. Okay. So how about if I show you this picture of Aaron? Anybody? Okay, so put your hand up when you think you know who it is, because Aaron Ralston, in April of 2003, went hiking in Big John Canyon, Blue Canyon, something like that, in Utah. And he violated one of the number one rules of hiking or bouldering or rappelling: always go with somebody, and if not, at least tell somebody where you are. And while descending, a boulder rolled onto his hand. Buddy, now do you know who I'm talking about? Some of you still not, so I'm going to shock you. Aaron found himself trapped by an 800-pound boulder on his hand. He was trapped for 5 days. And during those 5 days, he had 12 ounces of water and 2 burritos to live off of. And by day 5, he was living off of his own urine. He had a multi-purpose tool with him. And on day 3, he began experimenting a little bit of what it would be like to amputate his arm to free himself. And what he discovered by kind of practicing with a tourniquet and making a few superficial cuts was that he would have to go through bone to free himself. So on the evening of day 5, he took that tool and he scratched in his birth date and then what he thought was going to be his death date. And in the morning when he awoke, he decided to do it. And so he used what little strength he had left and his own body leverage to break both bones in his wrist, completely break them, and then he used that multi-purpose tool to cut the muscle, tendon, and flesh that was still remaining and amputated his hand to free himself. Then he rappelled down 65 feet, and after 6 hours of hiking, he was rescued. Now that is a great story, but the reason why I tell you that story is today, we're in a series we've called The Questions Jesus Asked. We've mentioned in the past that Jesus asked 307 questions and only answered 8 directly. But the question we're posing today or looking at is, do you want to get well? And when I think about that story and this question, I want to ask it this way. Do you really want to get well? Because a lot of us feel stuck. You get it, right? But how stuck are we? When Jesus asked this question, do you want to get well, of this man, and we're going to look at the story in a minute, it seems like a dumb question, doesn't it? Almost a rhetorical question. Of course he'd want to get well, but the fact that Jesus asks this question in the situation that he finds himself in, the man and Jesus' interaction with him, it leads us on closer look to see that maybe this question tells us a little bit about this man and his condition. It tells us a little bit about what our own assumptions might be about whether or not people really want to get well. It tells us something about Jesus and his ability to see people who are unwell, and his ability to do something about that unwellness. And it might, hopefully, tell us a little bit about ourselves. In John 5, leading up to this point, Jesus is becoming more and more well-known. He's turned water into wine. He's healed a royal official's son. And so he's gathering a following, and people are recognizing him when he comes into a region, and people are aware of who this Jesus is. And now he heads into Jerusalem in John chapter 5. And when he comes near this place that is called the Sheep Gate, there's a pool, and which in Aramaic, John says, is called Bethesda and is surrounded by five covered colonnades. And here a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, and the paralyzed. So Jesus is on his way into Jerusalem, and he passes this pool of water. And most scholars think that this is a mikveh, likely. It is kind of like a baptismal pool where worshiping Jews of that time would have to become, they would have to be ceremonially clean in order to go to temple. So it's on a main thoroughfare, likely. And these people, for convenience sake, they've made a mikveh where people can perform this ritual to get clean in case they've encountered anything on the trip. And so that place, though, has become a gathering place for the unwell, for the disabled, the sick, and the lame. And there are five colonnades, surrounding it. So you don't know if they didn't build these kind of like patio covers, they would be a colonnade, so that the worshipers who were on their way as they congregated and wait in line, do they have to like wait and get them out of the sun? Or did somebody compassionately build these covers for the lame and the sick who have found themselves gathering there? Likely, they have found this spot because people who are on their way to worship are a little more inclined to give or a little more inclined to see them and to take care of them and maybe throw them a bone. And so it's in that situation that Jesus is walking by. And in verse 5, there is one who had been there, who had been an invalid for 38 years. And when Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked, "Do you want to get well? Do you want to get well?" You see, look at the condition of the man in verse 5. He is not well. There's one who had been there, who had been an invalid for 38 years. Invalid translates unwell. Well is whole. Well is healthy. Well is intact. And this man is not any of that. He is unwell. And Jesus is asking him, "Do you want to go from the state that you're in, which is unwell, and change in some way to a state that would be referred to as well?" The man is surrounded by many others who are unwell. He's in good company, and yet Jesus singles him out, and he's asking him, "Do you want to get well?" See, this man's problem is that he's physically unwell. And physically unwell is much easier to see than soulfully unwell, but they're related. We can be both soulfully sick and we can be physically sick. We're much more complex than how we tend to separate ourselves into like, well, these are my physical ailments and these are my spiritual ailments or my mental ailments. It's like, truly, we're complex beings, and the worlds blend together in some way that not even the smartest people on the planet know. Usually, if we're physically unwell for an extended period of time, we're also soulfully unwell. And it's also true that being soulfully unwell can lead to physical unwellness. The psalmist in Psalm 31 talks about this idea that we're more than just a body and can either be well or unwell. Psalm 31:9, "Be merciful to me, O Lord, for I am in distress. I am not well. My eyes grow weak with sorrow, my soul and body with grief." I am both physically sick and soul sick. 1 Thessalonians, the Apostle Paul says that we are mind, body, and spirit. We are this complex amalgamation of soul and body, and they both can be sick. This unwellness, either physically or soulfully, is a universal problem. It has been since Genesis. The Genesis account tells of how humankind became unwell. And you know, if you've been in church for a while, you know the story goes that man fell. And in that moment, mankind became estranged from wellness. We became separated from God, estranged from Him. God had to seek man in the garden. We became unwell in our relationships with one another. And you know that Adam and Eve discovered things about themselves that they never knew before. And just thereafter, you have brother murdering brother. And they became estranged even from their environment. And they had to work the land now. Since Genesis 3, human beings have been unwell. And that unwellness that we experience, every once in a while, it disappears and we have a little moment of wellness. And you know what that's like when everything feels right. Your spirit feels aligned with God and physically you feel good. But those are fleeting moments. Most of us are, as James Finley writes, we are estranged from our own wellness. We're not whole. And so we live our lives in this state of unwellness and do the best that we can, right? We make decisions in our unwellness. We try to build a life. We try to do the right thing. We try to make a family. We try to fall in love. We try to find peace. We try to find a spouse and hold that relationship together. We try to be a good parent. And all the time, we're doing that in a state of unwellness. And there's something deep inside us that has a longing for healthiness. That's why Jesus asks this man, do you want to get well? And this question, I think, if we examine it closely, we're looking at how Jesus addresses our unwellness in this simple question. Do you want to get well is a compassionate question. It says something about who Jesus was. In this busy time, you know, people have got to get to the temple. Jesus has a mission. And on the way, he encounters this man and he takes time not just to notice him, but to talk to him. Can't you imagine that their lives were just as busy as our lives? If you're the Lord and Savior Jesus, don't you have a tight schedule? Don't you think he has places to be, and yet something in this question indicates the compassion Christ has for those that are unwell. And he speaks to this man. In Mark's Gospel, chapter 2, verse 17, Jesus said this about his ability to see the unwell. He said, it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. And I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. Jesus says of those that are unwell, both sick, both physically and soulfully, that I came for you. This is why I am here. And so this moment that he takes with this man is within his mission. I love what Hebrews 4 says. The writer of Hebrews says, and I'm going to do it in the King James because I think it best reflects the idea. He says that we do not have a high priest who is untouched by our infirmities. And the picture there is that there's this high priest who's a busy man. He's a religious man. He has to coordinate all kinds of religious activities. And the writer of Hebrews is juxtaposing Jesus against this religious leader. And he's saying, we don't have a high priest that's too busy to see that people are unwell because he's so busy taking care of religious business. Jesus says that is exactly the reason why I came. I came for the sick, and I came for the sinner, and sometimes those go together. I came for the sick sinners. Let that sink in. If you're not a churchgoer or you're new to church, I want you to consider this claim of Christ here. that he says that I came for the sick. I came for the unwell. There are many claims of Christ to consider. Was he resurrected really the third day? Did he perform miracles? Did he raise Lazarus from the dead? Was he really the Son of God? Was he born of a virgin? These are all claims that Christ made of himself. But in this passage and exemplified in John 5, we see Jesus saying, he's making a claim about himself. He's saying he came for the sick sinner. So if you're considering the claims of Christ, consider that Christ says, I came for you. It's a compassionate question. It's also a diagnostic question. Do you want to get well? Because that question allows for acknowledgement, right? For the man to respond, he has to acknowledge that he's unwell. I mean, he could go like, who are you talking to? It's not me. It's funny to me to think that at that time, people had the same issues with denial we have, right? When you go to the doctor, do you not pretend like you're weller than you are? Like when you get on the scale, don't you get on really lightly? Like that's going to help. You don't just jump on. Like I'm like exhaling. When they take your blood pressure, aren't you trying to like get that pressure down? You don't want to hear 147 over 93. You're like, come on, 112 over 72. And you go to your happy place. You're like, Bam. And then we fill out the questionnaire while you're waiting. It's like, you don't fudge a little bit on your questions? Like, how often do you drink alcohol? How often are you getting up to go to the bathroom? You know, what other prescription drugs are you taking? It's like, we all fudge a little. Doesn't really hurt that bad. Why do we do that? Because it's hard for us to acknowledge unwellness. And this question imposes that on this man. It allows for acknowledgement. And once you have acknowledgement, now you can diagnose, right? You called me out. Now I'm here. I have chest pain. Now you've admitted you have chest pain. Now we can talk about what kind of chest pain you have. Firemen coming out here. It's like, well, I can't ask you by a raise of hand how many have been PQRST, because you're gonna tell everybody you had chest pain, which would be a violation of your HIPAA law, I would just do here. But like when we show up and you say you have chest pain, we say, what provoked your chest pain? What were you doing? There are some very interesting answers to that. I was doing this. Oh, really? So what kind of pain is it? Was it a sharp pain? Is it a dull pain? All of these questions are to help diagnose what kind of chest pain you have. PQR, does it go anywhere else? Yeah, it goes really bad. But we're asking, does it go down your arms, in your neck? Does it go around to the back? Does it radiate somewhere? That's R. How severe is it? Scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the worst. Give it a number. People get mad at that question. It's like, and I always find it humorous when they say 10, and they're leaning around me to watch more cartoons. It's like, oh, it's a 10. No, it's not. 10's like laying on the floor, crying, thrashing around like a fish. And then how long has this pain been going on? Oh, 3 days. Then why did you call us at 3 a.m.? We never say that. This question is a diagnostic question. Can you acknowledge that you're unwell? What kind of unwellness do you have? And once we get there, now it allows for consent, right? Consent to treat. Evidently, lawsuits were an issue back then for Jesus, even in his healings. I got to get consent first. You know that you can't have any procedure done until you sign the piece of paper that says, I consent that you're going to do this to me. And all of these bad things can happen while they're doing it to you. Jesus is asking for consent, because we can't assume that this is the main thing this man wants. Do you want to get well? Well, I would rather someone just take care of me. Maybe he would just rather reconcile with his wife who left him because he'd been ill so long. I'm making that up, obviously. Because we can't assume that just because somebody is unwell, that they want to get well. In fact, sometimes the answer is no, I don't want to get well. As in the great theological work, Go Dog Go. You've read this, right? Do you like my hat? No, I do not like your hat. Goodbye. Do you want to get well? No, I do not want to get well. Well, goodbye then. Not everyone wants to get well, even once educated about the consequences. Do you want to stop your affair? No, I don't want to stop. Do you realize that if you continue, you're probably going to be financially hit? Do you realize that you're not going to see your children but a couple of times a week, if that? Do you realize you're going to live in pain? No, I do not want to stop my affair. Do you want to stop drinking excessively? No, I do not. Do you realize if you continue that behavior, you're likely to get a DUI, which is going to destroy your ability to work, destroy your life? You might just kill somebody and you'll go to prison. And you'll lose whatever certification or ability to work that you have. Do you want to stop drinking? No. Do you want to stop smoking? Ooh. No, I'm just going to vape, which I don't even know how to feel about vaping right now. I think it's better for you, and I can't decide, is it cool or do you look dumb? Because when you're driving down a road vaping, I'm thinking Cheech and Chong when you're blowing that out of the window. It smells really good, but I don't know. Well, that's not actually part of my sermon. That part was free. Not everyone wants to get well. Because of that, this do you want to get well, it's also an introspective question, right? It turns it back and it makes us think, well, do I? Do I want to get well? Because we get stuck. And anybody who's been stuck, you know that the unwellness, even though you would not have chosen it in the first place, it can become a comfort spot for us. It begins to define us, and it becomes hard to let go of. In verse 5, John notes that he had been an invalid for 38 years, and he had been in this condition for a really long time. And the man's answer kind of indicates how stuck he is, how limited his perspective is on being well as he meets Jesus. Verse 7, "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. And while I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." And he's referring to like what some translations of the Bible leave out, but there's a verse inserted here in some translations that talks about this legend that had developed by those that sat around this pool, that when the water moved, and supposedly an angel had stirred it, and the first person to get in the water got healed. So whether this is going on or not, it seems to have been some you know, way of thinking for this man. And so his thinking is so limited. He's saying, there's no way, because I'm an invalid, that I can get in the water. It's like, I can't follow the normal procedure. Everyone beats me into the pool. So he can't even imagine being well. It's the way it is. I mean, I get angry and blow up because I'm Italian. Sorry to pick on Italians. Irish, I don't know. But we can begin to say, well, that's just me. This is just who I am. And I don't know in this man's case or in your case or in my case all the time whether this is a legitimate issue of being stuck or it's just victimology. But this man certainly cannot see beyond his paradigm at this point, which is why Jesus asks him the question. Do you want to get well? Think about it. Do you? Do you want to get well also poses yet another question. How much of getting well is on me? What part do I have in my own healing? Does God impose healing? Does he just say, well, you know, you really don't want to get well, but I'm doing it for you anyway? Sometimes, I think. But usually there's a step toward God that God requires. Notice that the first thing Jesus asks this man to do is to do something that was totally impossible up to this point for him to do. He says, do you want to get well? And in verse 8, he says, get up and pick up your mat and walk. In this man's understanding, that is totally impossible. That's what it's like to be stuck. I can't even see that happening. But it's coupled, not just in the story, but like verse to verse, back to back in verse 9. And at once the man was cured and he picked up his mat and he walked. And there's a timing thing there that I see, that he took a step, that there was some effort that this triggered in him to take a step. Now, this can be grossly misinterpreted, you know, to say that our healing is on us. And certainly there are plenty of wrong Bible teachers that would say, if you can't get it done, you just don't have enough faith. But let me be honest with you. It's like, it's required here in Jesus. Many times in the gospel says to people, your faith has healed you. So there's something. There's something that's probably balanced by the Apostle Paul's situation. And I'm so thankful this is recorded in Scripture as well, because if you know about Paul, he had this thing. He had this thing he called a thorn in the flesh. It was a besetting thing. We don't really know what it was, but it pulled him down. And in 2 Corinthians 12, he had been praying about this. And he concludes in verse 7, this thing came to me to keep me from being conceited because of the surpassingly great revelations. There was given to me a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. And three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. Take it away, God, take it away. I want to be well. And yet in verse 9, God says back to him, My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. The answer for you, Paul, and remember, Paul healed. He was around healing. He wrote about healings. He witnessed healings. And he's asking for a healing. I want to be well. And yet God's answer to him is, the wellness I'll bring to you is grace. And in that grace, I will infuse you with it so that in your weakness, you will be strong, because I will fill you. And that for Paul, he goes on to say, therefore, I will boast the more gladly about my weakness. I will boast about my unwellness so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weakness, in insults, and hardships, and persecutions, and difficulties. That is one list of unwellness, right? All of these things make us soul sick or physically sick. For when I am weak, then I am strong. What part do we have? So the question is a compassionate question. It's diagnostic. It's introspective. It leads to other questions. But it's also a personal question. Do you want to get healed? Do you want to be well? Jesus didn't ask it of the group. He didn't stand before everyone and say, okay, everyone here, raise your hand if you want to be well. And he didn't ask the man, do you want to get well if everybody else around you gets well first? The man didn't answer that way either. It's like, well, I'll get well if he gets well. It's a personal question. Do you want to get well? then take a step. The question isn't whether your spouse wants to get well, whether your coworker wants to get well, whether your children want to get well, whether your loved one or your crazy uncle or whoever it might be on your list, whether your pastor wants to get well. It's, do you want to get well? It's personal. If so, if you need a program, get in a program. If you need counseling, get counseling. Maybe you need to open your heart to the gospel for the first time. Maybe the idea here isn't that you got to fix yourself all up so that you can be worthy to come to church, but maybe your wellness starts with opening your heart to the good news that Christ came for the sick and the sinners and also the sick sinners. That is the gospel. Do you want to get well? And then I just like, in closing, like to just twist this. One more little twist to turn it back on us and ask those who name the name of Christ, do we want to help others get well? Because that is the calling of being a Christ follower. You know, in this story, the man says to Jesus, in essence, I'd like to get well, but there's no one to help me. Could this not be said of our generation and what's going on in the Christian community? I'm going to be pastor here for a second, okay? I'm going to get all up in your business. If you had your toes here, I'd step on your toes. Don't try to push off. Like, what is going on with Christians today? We're hustling and bustling and we're on our way to temple. And thousands of us are walking by the unwell. We were healed by Christ in some regard. And as Henry Nouwen says, I believe that we are wounded healers. Now it is on us to be those that stop along the way and offer wellness to others. But instead, it seems like we're like retreating further and further. There's all these unwell, and they look differently than me, and they have different beliefs, and they vote differently, and it's like they're the enemy. And so the Christian community keeps retracting and retracting and building our walls around us so that all the unwell people can't get to us. Because, I mean, and if we could just find a place to go where there were no more of these people, it would be awesome, wouldn't it? If I could just find a place to move to where there's no more unwell people, no more craziness, no more people that don't agree with me. I found myself thinking that way. Yet Christ has left us here to bring wellness, to live the gospel in a way that people see Christ. Even to the point that we might look somebody in the eye and say, do you want to get well? Because I know a guy. It seems to me that there's something about our former unwellness that's easy to forget. It plays forward in a way that we become isolated and kind of untouched by others that are unwell. But we also forget who we were, who we are without the exceeding, loving, unconditional grace of God, that even in our unwellness, Christ loved us. And we forget. And I'm hoping that this question posed to this man sparked something in us to remember that we too were unwell. You know that when Jesus instituted communion, he pulled his disciples together in the upper room, and he said, whenever you break this bread and whenever you drink this cup, remember me. Part of remembering Christ is remembering that we were unwell. And it's easy. If you had a chronic illness for a while, you had chronic pain, or you had cancer 10, 15, 20 years ago, even though it's somewhere back in your mind, don't you kind of forget it? It's almost like you can't remember what it was like to be that sick or in that much pain. You know, 8 years ago, I had back surgery. And I can tell you, leading up to that surgery, I was in the kind of pain that, like, if I thought that was going to go on, I was thinking some pretty dark thoughts. And narcotics were my friend. And every time I mean, there was no relief. Standing up, laying down, sitting, every time, it just hurt constantly. And I thought, I can't live like this. That's 8 years ago. And after laminectomy, and I just like to say, I'm a believer in laminectomy. It's right up there against faith in God, you know. It's like I was a new person immediately. But it's hard for me to remember that unwellness. Now I'm getting a little older, and so there's some things that remind me. But that's how our unwellness is. It's easily forgettable. And that's why Jesus gave us communion, so that we could stop and we could remember. So you've been a Christian for a long time, and you're going to take communion this morning. I would just say, remember. Remember or imagine what life would be like without Christ. Remember. And then if you're like new to faith, you're not at faith yet, I would encourage you to like let the taking of communion today to be kind of that tangible step, that first step toward Christ, where you say, yeah, I'd like to get well. There's a wellness I'm seeking, and I'm open to what God would have for me through the gospel. Let's pray. God, we are unwell, all of us. In varying degrees and different seasons, we experience our own brokenness and an estrangement from joy and you and others that we love. Would you, in this moment of communion, remind us of the glorious gospel of how remarkable God's love is, how unconditional and unfathomable it is. And create in our hearts a thankfulness for being well as we can be on this side. In Jesus' name, amen.